You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Craig Burley, Shaka Hislop and myself, Kay Murray, here in the studio. And we'll kick things off with Premier League action, where Arsenal were at home to take on Newcastle in a game that finished 0-0. There were a couple of big chances in it, one from Joel Linton, one from Nketiah as well. But in the end, it was a clean sheet for both. There was a big decision in the 60th minute, though, that went against Arsenal when they felt they should have been given a penalty. Later on, another one as well. But this is how it ended. Arsenal, just a point from this one. It would have been a 10-point lead at the top of the table had they won it. They are still at the top of the table, but obviously a game ahead of Manchester City now. Still leading up there, but dropping points, and there'll be a lot to discuss with that game as we do now welcome in Frank Leboeuf and Mark Ogden as well, who did see the game today. Craig, I will start with you, though. Yeah. Can Arsenal feel aggrieved not to have been given that 60th minute penalty?
I think so. Certainly, we saw the handball there, but we didn't. Both Jack and I didn't think that was a penalty. But certainly the pulling of the shirt from Dan Byrne on Gabriel in the six-yard box is pretty clear to me. Now, if the referee misses it, which obviously he did, then that's why we have the VAR. Now, if that's not a penalty obstructing somebody, you just got clear hold of the shoulder of the shirt, the top of the shirt, it pulls him back, then we're struggling to understand what the criteria is for a penalty kick, because it's the old adage, anywhere else on the field, and that's a clear free kick, it's an infringement. So yeah, I think Arsenal can feel aggrieved about that. Quick Arteta watch, he's still a pain in the butt on the side, never stops. Whether that's going to be detrimental to Arsenal and the players as the season goes on, as everybody gets hyped up, and you know that feeling of the pressure and the anxiety, and you look round and he's bobbing about as he is in the touchline, we shall see. But I think Arsenal, the one word for them, for me, today, was frustrated. Mm. I think Newcastle frustrated them. And not a disaster for both sides, but I think they looked like a frustrated side today when that game finished.
I think to that point, Arsenal have to be the more aggrieved of the two, for obvious reasons. And not just because of the penalty or no penalty call. Seeing that, as I'm watching the game, and I'm a little bit biased, in case you don't know, I'm thinking Pope does enough just to save Billings' blushes. But then every single replay I see, I'm like, goodness me, Newcastle got away with one there. But to be honest, Odegaard had a couple of opportunities, one very early on, that had he had a shoot at boots on and scored and forced Newcastle out to be more attack-minded, who knows which way this game would have gone. So there were a couple of opportunities that I thought Arsenal could have done better with. But at the same time, you then have to give Newcastle some credit for how well they defended. Can't give them much credit for any attacking because I didn't see an awful lot of that. Given the size of Newcastle defensively, every time Arsenal got the ball wide, all they could do is try to sling it along the floor, and Newcastle found themselves in really good positions just to tidy those up. So that was very frustrating for Arsenal. If you're Newcastle, you come away from this with a point, thinking, I'm really happy with this point. I'm not so sure if I deserve it, but going away to the league leaders, that's a point well earned.
Mark, you were at the game tonight. Could you feel that frustration? Was there a tension in the stadium?
It wasn't so much in the stadium. I thought the atmosphere was quite good at the beginning, but I think it all turned after about half an hour when Arteta started to lose his temper. And it was like watching Pep Guardiola at his worst and Jose Mourinho at his worst. This kind of almost snarling away at the official. It was in the face of the fourth official at one point, and that's transmitted to the players. They picked up three pretty quick bookings, and at that point you could see that they were getting frustrated by not being able to break Newcastle down, and then it transmitted to the stadium. So it was a strange night for Arsenal. I felt that they showed a bit of inexperience tonight, that didn't quite know how to deal with a team that was basically set up to stop them play. And Arteta showed his inexperience as well, because it's only January. You know, we haven't even got to the point of the season where it gets tense yet, and it gets edgy, and it gets nervous. We've got 5 months to go. And the stadium, the Emirates, the fans are desperate for success. And what will happen is that frustration will transmit itself to the players. And this stadium will become a really tense and edgy and nervous stadium in the weeks and months to come. So the way that Arteta reacted tonight and the way it transmitted to the team is not a good sign. I mean, they've still got a great, was it 8-point lead, and Man City have got a Chelsea and win on Thursday, which is going to be tricky because City aren't playing particularly great, and Chelsea, who knows? So, you know, Arsenal still got a very good lead, but I saw signs tonight that it's going to be tough from in the next few weeks because they do lack a bit of experience in key areas, and it was all basically left to Saka and Martinelli to make a difference. So they're just young kids on the wing, really.
Do you agree with that, Frank, that there are signs that there could be problems ahead for Arsenal?
I wouldn't go that far, you know. It's always hard to talk when you're the last, you know, and especially when you agree with the guys. But I think Arsenal could be disappointed with only a point because they had like 3-4 chances to score. But it can happen, you know, and they did what they had to do. I think credit to Newcastle where, you know, we didn't see Martinelli a lot. We didn't see Odegaard and Partey a lot as well. And it was hard to cope with the situation. Yes, Arteta got very nervous, and I think he has to take care of his health and his heart. You know, if he carries on like that, he's going to be in danger. But otherwise, you know, I think Arsenal did everything they had. They were kind of misfortunate at some point, you know, especially with Gabriel in the first half, header, and Martinelli's one in the second half, where they could have scored a goal and it would have been a different result. So, yes, there was a penalty for them on top of them. So, yeah, they can be disappointed. But if because of that game and of that draw, everything is back to the past, or everything becomes a question mark, I think it wouldn't be fair. I think they are in a good move, a good mood, and they have to carry on working like that, and everything will go right. Sorry.
I think it tells you everything you need to know, though, about this Arsenal side, that Newcastle approached the game in the manner in which they did, because Newcastle really have been, certainly in the last 6 months, and certainly in the last 3 or 4 months, but generally during the calendar year where they've picked up so many points, or last year, forgetting we're in 2023, 2022 rolling into this new year, they've played front foot football. You know, they've got at teams even away from home, they've got at teams, we saw it at Leicester, okay, it's a different kettle of fish, but they went to Leicester, blew them away in the first 45 minutes. Here we saw a very more pragmatic approach, and I think that is down to the fact that Arsenal are obviously and have been such a threat with those players that Mark mentioned, Martinelli, Saka, Odegaard, and even Nketiah coming in. But today we saw the other side of Newcastle. Yeah, there was the frustration from the time wasting and maybe one or two Newcastle players going down to get treatment, and Arsenal were getting, the players were getting frustrated, the manager was getting frustrated, as Augie said, and it came through to the crowd. But their success in getting a point was built on one of the things that they addressed straight away when the ownership changed and Eddie Howe came in, was the back line. You know, Byrne, Cher, Botman, Pope, Trippier, absolutely rock solid at the back, want to defend, big strong defenders who can also pass the ball a bit. And they were a hard team to beat today. And that was a complete mindset change from how they have been playing recently. And so, as Augie was saying, it's something Arsenal are going to have to deal with. We're in January. There's lots of big games to come for them. Yes, everyone's a big one for them because of the pressure. But that's only going to intensify. And they're going to get this more and more as the season gets deeper. Teams trying to be hard to beat.
To that point, though, I think, listen, I sat here a couple of days ago and said I thought Arsenal continue to prove me wrong in so many things that I've been seeing about them all season long. And this could be another big moment for Arsenal and for Arteta, because on the face of it, you are disappointed, 2 points dropped, you see how Newcastle defend against you, but it's how you spin this, and we're talking about Arteta's and Arsenal's inexperience, but you just come up against the team who are third in the table at home, you have two-thirds of the possession, you have a couple of your standout players who have had better days, is the best way to put it. And you were the only team in the game, in all honesty. Now, what do you say to your team after that? And how do you spin that in talking to your team tomorrow at the training ground? It's just, listen, we dropped 2 points, but we take that on the chin. You know, it's no reason to panic. And if, as long as Arteta is able to do that, get that message across, get Arsenal to continue, I don't want to say back to playing their best football, because it was damn good today. They just came up against a very resolute Arsenal. Play a game. Your game has got you this far. This is just a little knock on the chin. No big deal. We could cope with that.
And Mark, what did it tell us about Newcastle then today? Did it tell us that they will be staying in the top four come the end of the season? They've just gone away to the leaders and come away with a point and still a clean sheet.
Yeah, 11 goals conceded all season and they've only lost one game. And I was at that game, it was Anfield, it was a very, very late goal. So they're very hard to beat. And I think, you know, there's a bit of a gap building there between the top four and the rest. And I think, you know, I do think Newcastle, I do think Liverpool and Tottenham, certainly Liverpool will come good at some point, and that will be the pressure on Newcastle. But as it stands right now, you've got to say defensively, certainly they can hold on. They do need some goals. I think they need, I mean, let's be honest, it's two successive goalless draws now, so as good a result it is, that's two games without scoring a goal. So that is where the problems lie. But, you know, because everybody else beneath them is struggling to convince, they've got a chance. But there's a long time to go. There's 5 months to go. We're not even at the halfway stage yet. So Newcastle have built a really good foundation and they're very good defensive. And that is the bedrock of all successful teams. But they do need to find somebody to score more goals.
Scoring goals wasn't a problem for Manchester United today. Go on, Frank.
Yeah, I think we... Craig just said that he has to say that the back four with Pop, you know, played very well today with Newcastle. But I think they showed to the world today, or the world was watching the game, that in fact they really work as a team. Because the four at front, you know, Joelinton, Wilson, Almiron, and I forgot the other one, Willock, sorry, worked all together, especially defensively. And as they wanted a result, they got it. They got it because they worked so hard together. Yes, Arsenal could have scored, but you have to emphasize the fact that most of the time, because when you have a clean sheet and it's been the 10th for Newcastle this season, it's because of the back four and the goalkeeper. No, it's not. It's a teamwork, and Newcastle is showing to the world that they can be very strong away from home, and you have to respect them because what Eddie Howe is doing with the team can say that in the future they can finish in the first four because they are working together, and they, as long as you don't lose a game, you have always a chance to win it, and it's what's going to happen to them for sure.
Yeah, it was a win for Manchester United, though, over Bournemouth today. It's a game that you had your eye on, Frank. What did you make of them in their latest win?
Well, I would say that I was bored the first half, except for the Casemiro fantastic goal that he scored. And I liked the second half, what they did. Maybe because Bournemouth tried to play a little bit and to get the results back. But at the end of the day, you know, there were only one team on the field. And the second goal from Luke Shaw is absolutely a beauty for me, where he gets the ball back in his own 16-yard box and bring it back. Look, he's going to get the ball now and going to get everything, you know, the 1-2 with Rashford, then going to go forward. He's going to switch to another player, but he's going to carry on playing. And going to get the ball back, you know, and score the goal. And he's the man of the match because the ball that he gives now to Fernandes is a real beauty and a great goal from Rashford. So second half good because the nice moves, but first half quite boring.
Craig, have you heard from Jan Agafiotto?
I have. Yeah, Jan is a. Jan keeps reminding me. I've told you. He says, I told you, man. I said we've talked positively. Most of us about Man United after the rocky start to the season. Look, it's not rocket science when you have two absolutely hapless managers and coaches in there that a very experienced one with a much better CV comes in and starts to turn things around. There's no doubt United are looking, there's a long way to go, but they're looking in a good place to really push for that top four. Now, I'm not denying that. There are so many improvements so far that we've seen. Players returning to form like Marcus Rashford, Casemiro coming in, doing a brilliant job. Obviously, he's got a big cup game against Everton on Friday, so he's made a couple of changes to this game. You've got Dalot who came back. You know, that back line will change. The two centre-halves will change when everybody's fit and fresh again. So, yeah, there's lots and lots of positives. As I mentioned, there's two cup games coming up, and then they have Man City and Arsenal. So it's a big 3 or 4 weeks for them. I think they're in a good place to meet those demands head on.
But as somebody who does like to give a bit of reality when we're talking about these things, you have to look at the last three league games in terms of who they played. Two of the teams in the bottom three, in Nottingham Forest and Wolves, and Bournemouth have been struggling. So you can only beat who's in front of you. But my point is, there are just so many bigger tests for this Man United side to come.
Mark Ogden, Harry Maguire was in the starting 11 today. How is his future looking, though? Uncertain?
Well, he played today, so that's a positive, isn't it? But I guess I don't think Maguire can get out of the United at the moment. I think he's got 3 years left in his contract, and it's going to cost a lot of money for a club to take him out, or United have to make a massive cut on what they expect from him. So I don't see Maguire going anywhere. I think he's just going to have to fight for his place. But when United are at their best, it'll be Varane and Lisandro Martinez at centre-half. I think that's a reality. I think that's the best centre-half partnership. So Maguire's going to have to wait for his chance to come. And it might not come this season. I think when we get to the summer, that's when United might look at moving him on. But I just don't know where he goes. I mean, it's a bit like the Ronaldo situation, this, isn't it? That, you know, a player that's got a big price tag, big wages, a decent reputation, but, you know, where does he go? Who buys Harry Maguire? Who signs Harry Maguire? I don't see a club out there that wants him or will pay what United want or pay his wages. So I think he's stuck at United. But, you know, he played tonight, and I think he's better than people give him credit for. I think he's a confidence defender. I think when he plays in a team that has got players that are playing well, and he's got a midfield that's protecting him better than last season, then he'll do all right. But ultimately, I don't think he's a Man United quality player, and that will kind of bear itself out in the future windows. But like I say, they've got to find somebody to take him off the hands, pay a decent fee, and pay his wages.
Augie's got more chance of selling those glasses than Man United have of selling Harry Maguire.
Yeah, but he doesn't want to be a squad player, does he?
I think Arsenal have handed them out to every journalist when they've arrived at the Emirates tonight, with the looks of them.
I want to be able to see what I'm doing.
But, oh dear, glasses. Somebody's pinched mine from my desk as well. Chips they were. Somebody's pinched them from my desk.
Nice. Just to put the finish on. Harry Maguire is 29. He doesn't want to be a squad player, does he?
He is. But I agree. I mean, you're talking transfer fee, you're talking wages, and then you're looking around at the clubs. He's not going to go to Liverpool. He's not going to go to Chelsea. They're not going to buy him. He's not going to go to Newcastle. They've got... they've bought centre-halves. He's not going to go to Arsenal. So where then are you looking? He's unlikely to return to Leicester. They've got the money for him. So then you're looking at a loan. Does then Eric Ten Hag want to loan him out? Because he's quite happy, like, I suppose, in some sense, Ronaldo, when he was there, became a squad player. You need these guys that have Varane, Martinez, Lindelof, any of these are injured or not playing well or ill. You need people to come in. So I think he's kind of stuck because... You know, he did a good job for England in the summer at the World Cup. Bearing in mind he hadn't played, or hardly had played for his club. And I think whilst he's not the favourite at Man United with the manager, he at least knows, as Augie said, when he's on his day, he's a decent centre-half that can come in and do a job. So I kind of think he's stuck there because Man United need to have a deep squad.
Oh, well, they don't have Cristiano Ronaldo anymore. On Tuesday, he was unveiled at his new club, Al Nassr. And he did say that he turned down other offers from different teams before joining this club in Saudi Arabia. He said, "Nobody knows this, but I had many opportunities in Europe, Brazil, Australia, America, Portugal. Many clubs tried to sign me. I gave my word to this club. I want to give a different vision of this country and football. This is why I took this opportunity." What do you make of what he said there, Mark? Because you've been out to Saudi Arabia and seen how the setup is there in football.
Yeah, I was at Al Nassr during the World Cup. And listen, it's a nice stadium. It's like an MLS stadium. It's 25,000. It's compact. It's tidy. But, I mean, I was at a game that Newcastle played against Al Hilal. And the stadium they played at is where Ronaldo's probably going to make his debut in about 10 days. And it's just not what Ronaldo's used to. He's going to have such a culture shock when he plays in Saudi Arabia. It is really sad that the fact that this great player that is used to playing at the Bernabeu, at Old Trafford, at, you know, Juventus, is going to pursue his career in Saudi Arabia. Now, he said the right things. Obviously, he's speaking in Riyadh. He's speaking at his new club. He has to say the right things. But I can't believe that I mean, the money's massive, obviously, but I can't believe that he's gone there for the chance. He talks about clubs in Brazil, in Australia, US. If he's been offered a chance to go to Brazil, go to Brazil. What a legacy that would be to go to Brazil and try and win a title in Brazil. Or, you know, he mentioned Portugal. Why on earth is he going to Saudi Arabia? Because it's not a league that anybody goes to. You know, there are leagues in the world that, you know, former great players go to. They go to the J League, they go to MLS, they go to, they even go to the Qatari League. Nobody goes to Saudi Arabia. And it might start people going to Saudi Arabia, but I just don't see it. I just think it can say the right things, but there's no valid reason to go to Saudi Arabia other than the massive financial package that he's getting.
I thought we promised not to talk about him again, although I did bring him up. I'm sorry, I did. But yeah, I'm sure there were clubs that were interested in signing him, just not the clubs that back in the summer when he initially was trying to sort of make a move or work his way out of Man United during the pre-season. I think he was hoping that those clubs were going to be elite level in the top leagues, and they just were not. No matter what his agent is telling him or whoever's telling him what, those offers were just not there. And I think it was a surprise to him that there wasn't really any takers from the real big boys. So yeah, he's making his money. That's his choice. But I don't think there's going to be many people interested in the results from the Saudi Arabian League.
Just at the bottom end of the Premier League, things aren't looking too good for Everton. There were a couple of other games today as well. They had a big loss to Brighton, 4-1 it finished in that game. Leicester also beaten 1-0 by Fulham. As for Leicester, that was their third loss on the bounce since the restart. This is how things are looking at the bottom end of the table. Now we have FA Cup action coming up starting on Friday. Manchester United back at it against Everton. You've got Spurs taking on Portsmouth as well to kick things off on Saturday. Liverpool, Wolves, Man City against Chelsea. And on Monday, it will bring us Oxford against Arsenal. All of this available on ESPN+. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Head on over to our website to see the latest article from Mark Ogden on Chelsea's problems and how Graham Potter might not have too much time left there at the helm of the club. Mark Ogden is still with us, Frank Leboeuf as well. Just taking a look at Graham Potter's record at Chelsea. It's 15 points from 10 games, 4 wins, 3 draws and 3 losses as well. 12 goals scored in that time, 9 goals scored against them. So Potter is under a bit of pressure right now, it is fair to say, Mark Ogden. The January transfer window is now open. Are they trying to hijack that deal for Mihailo Mudrik?
They are. That's what some of the Shakhtar are today, and Chelsea have been in touch, and they've opened talks with Shakhtar about Mudrik, and they're going to speak to Dario Cerna, who's the director of football at Shakhtar, later this week. So, you know, it could be a play just to put a bit of pressure on Arsenal to up their bid. But the thing with Chelsea is that they're spending money like I've never seen before in my life. I mean, they've already committed over £300 million now on players. I think when they get Benoit Badia-Schelling from Monaco, it'll be over £300 million since the summer, which which is crazy. They talk about Enzo Fernandez as well for over £100 million. So they've got money to spend. So Mudryk, you know, maybe 50, 60, 70 million pounds. Chelsea can do it because when Todd Bowley took over in the summer, they paid £2.5 billion for Chelsea, but committed £1.75 to infrastructure and investment. It seems they're going to spend most of that on players. So Chelsea are in for Mudryk, and let's see what it got, where it goes. They do get deals done, so I'd say they've got a very good chance of getting him.
Is this what they need, Craig?
Well, they've got a lot of wide players, or wide-ish players, which he generally plays. However, some of them are not playing particularly well. You know, Pulisic, Sterling, Ziyech coming off the World Cup. Mudryk is a different kind of player. He's more direct, he's pacey. Young guy, very dynamic. But I don't know. I mean, it just seems that the new ownership has come in and it's trying to do everything very quickly. It's a bit of a scattergun approach, and that includes the management. So, I mean, we have no idea what they're going to do in that front. They've got two games in the next 4 or 5 days against Manchester City. They've just come off the back of some more disappointing results. So, I mean, yeah, they might go and bring in these new players that Augie mentioned, but, you know, who's going to be managing the club and what kind of decision is this consortium going to make in that respect if the results continue to be of a negative connotation? So, I just don't know at the moment with Chelsea. It seems to me they're just throwing everything together and seeing what sticks.
It's interesting though, isn't it, Mark? Because it's a lot of money that we're talking about. They seem to be spending a lot of money. It's got that fantasy football feeling to it. Does Potter get a say in any of this?
I'm sure he has an opinion, but how much his opinion counts. I mean, I think we've seen it is fantasy football, isn't it? I think the money they've spent, and there's no real strategy to it. You look at those signings they've made, and I don't understand how they can let Lukaku and Timo Werner go and not bring a striker in. They're just signing defenders up left, right, and centre, and they're paying massively over the odds for players. Kukurea they paid too much for. Wesley Fofana they paid too much for. You could argue they paid over the odds for Raheem Sterling because I think what he's given since he went to Chelsea is nowhere near what he was given to Man City. So I just don't see in that list of incomings what a Graham Potter player. You know, they brought Graham Potter in to turn Chelsea into a club that's, you know, going to play the long game, but the signings are long game signings. They're all over the place, and the Mudryk thing just seems to be, oh well, Mudrick's available, let's try and get Mudryk as well. If I was Potter, I'd be quite concerned. He's got his big chance. He could never turn down the chance of managing Chelsea. But I think he's going there thinking, what am I doing here? What in terms of where's my say? Where's my input? Where's my fingerprints on this team? I don't see it. And when I saw him playing against Forest at the weekend, it was like a team of strangers. And the players just don't fit together. And unfortunately, that's what he signed up to. And I think he knew what he was signing up to. But he's stuck with it now. And I think he's going to find it difficult to turn it around because he's working with players that aren't his players.
Frank, do you share Mark's concerns about Graham Potter?
I do, because we saw many times at Chelsea, you know, coaches coming and going, and it's sad in a way that if Mr. Potter knew that he had no fingerprints to put inside the club, he shouldn't have signed, because he knows that he will be in a washing machine and he will never see any or make any comment about what he says about the player signing. And of course, you know, somebody has to pay the price, and it's always the coach who pays the price because he's the only one. You cannot change five or six players. I said yesterday in the show, or 2 days ago in the show, you have to change, in order to be better, five or six players who normally plays. I don't want to mention names because it's not my duty to do so, but we all see what's going wrong inside that team. I don't think Mr. Potter has a chance to build something. I thought he was picked to change the way of thinking of Chelsea, not buying stars, but building something with young players, with Mason Mount, for example, and so many other players who could bring something to the club. Fofana was a very good idea for the future, you know, and we see all those players struggling because there is no idea, there is no plans whatsoever from anybody. And the only one who can have a plan is Mr. Potter, because he's at the head of the team. It's not Mr. Bolli, it's nobody from the board, it's not, of course, the press, he can't even be the players. He has to be Mr. Potter. But if he cannot say anything, of course, you're going to go for a big mess. If he cannot buy the player he wants, and he's forced to play those players the board signs, it's become a big mess. And it's what we have right now. And as Craig said, you buy players, you put everybody, you get to almost steal players from other clubs to make sure that you get all the players, but you don't know what to do with it. So it's a big mess.
I'm concerned for him. I think this is going awry very quickly. When he went into Brighton, he replaced Chrissie Houghton, who I thought, and I do think he's a good manager with lots of experience, but he's very pragmatic. He's very pragmatic in his approach, and he completely, the boys touched about putting his fingerprint on it, he completely changed. It was a full 360 in terms of how they played the game. It was Brighton were a team that survived and been hard to beat. They then became a side under Potter that were playing some of the best football in the Premier League. Yeah, they lacked some goals up front, and that was a big problem for them. But he completely changed the mindset of these players and how they approach the game, with some recruitment as well. I just don't think he's going to get that and be able to do it at Chelsea. It's hard to teach old dogs new tricks, and he's searching and he's searching and he's searching. And the other side is, we just don't know. We knew under Abramovich it was hiring and firing. We just don't know what this consortium are going to do.
I really sympathise with Potter and the position he's found himself in. And to Mark's point, I think he's gone in there and found things to be a whole lot worse than he thought. Or maybe he went in thinking that he would have some time to turn things around, as he did with Brighton. But what you've seen with Chelsea under Boehly is, Craig used the term scattergun approach, and it's exactly this January so far, and certainly this pursuit of Mudryk seems to be following on from what you saw in the summer. From the time you see somebody else go after a player, now all of a sudden Chelsea throw their hat in that same ring, and there doesn't seem to be any thought around what we need or what we're going to do or players that we're going to go after. Somebody else has identified a good player, so therefore we should get ourselves involved. And we all wondered what Boehly would be like once he took over this club. And it seems like he's trying to be Roman Abramovich part two, but without the experience of hiring and firing, and without the buffer of success at club level, so the fans could buy into whatever it is you're doing, or more to the point, football and football managers know what they're signing up for. So it's in total disarray for Chelsea. And now you have a very good manager in Graham Potter under immense pressure. He hasn't had a transfer window yet. Or this is his first. We're 3 days into Potter having a transfer window and addressing any of his needs with Chelsea. How is that the way to run a football club? I am not at all sure, and I sympathise for one of the brightest minds in English management.
And just what any under pressure manager would want this week is back-to-back meetings with Manchester City, Mark. Are these meetings going to prove decisive for his future?
Well, I think if they lose against City in the league, that puts them really out of the top four race. I mean, considering how Man United are pulling away right now. And the FA Cup, if they lose the FA Cup tie at the Etihad, that's another competition closed off. So if they're out of the top four race and they're out of the FA Cup, they're out of the League Cup already. They've got to win the Champions League to get back in the Champions League next season. So that's massive pressure. And, Todd Bowley's saying it's a different kind of Chelsea and Potter will get time to change things. But I don't buy that. I think if they miss out on the Champions League, it's a different scenario altogether. And I think you can have a plan. But if you miss out on the Champions League, you have to, Todd Bowley's inexperienced. He has to look at managers that have got a track record. And I think it's an experiment that looks like it's failing because Graham Potter hasn't been given the tools that he needs. He's just been given, like you say, a blank chequebook, but it's the owner that's spending the money, not the manager.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in this transfer window. You can keep up to date with all of it as we say goodbye to Mark Ogden, but you can go on over and check out our transfer talk on the website and see what's going on, especially with Chelsea's race for a striker. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thousands turned out to pay their respects to Pelé, who was laid to rest in Santos, the city of his former club. Pelé had been lying in state for 24 hours in the centre of the pitch at the Urbano Caldeira Stadium for the public to pay their respects. His coffin had a Brazilian flag draped over it and was carried through the road full of fans mourning for the loss of Pelé. Over on our website, Tim Vickery has written an article on what he meant to Brazil. Genius, king, god. Brazil gave Pelé many names and he lived up to them all. You can check that out over on our website. Espanyol have filed a complaint against Barca for fielding an ineligible player, that player being Robert Lewandowski, whose suspension was put on hold after a ruling by a Madrid court. Espanyol maintain their view that the striker should not have featured and are pushing forward with their complaint. They filed the appeal with the Royal Spanish Football Federation against that three-match suspension he was given. Vinicius Jr. suffered racist abuse in Real Madrid's 2-0 win over Valladolid, and let's say not for the first time in Spain has the player undergone racism. The abuse occurred as he left the pitch as a substitute. He was initially upset at La Liga's lack of reaction to this incident. They've now filed hate crime charges because of this incident. This is the league statement on the racial abuse suffered by Vinny, saying La Liga has presented formal complaints to the appropriate judicial, administrative and sporting bodies over the racist insults against the player, Vinicius Jr., during the game between Real Valladolid and Real Madrid during the last match day. A criminal complaint for hate crimes has been filed with the court in Valladolid, accompanied by the audio-visual evidence gathered in the investigation, which has been carried out with sound and images published on open sources. Isn't it time for something else, Shaka? We keep seeing these incidents continue.
And we had this, or it seemed to be a similar situation play out, again with Vinicius Jr., again the court's ruling that the racist abuse didn't last that long, and because it was a derby, it was understandable, so the courts refused to do anything about it. So I'm not sure that the league, in their efforts to address racism in the game, can rely on the judicial system. That being said, to their statement, they're saying that they've lodged appeals with the administrative and sporting bodies, but surely La Liga is the sporting body responsible for La Liga. So I don't understand why there isn't meaningful legislation drawn up within the league in addressing these issues. Within the league, ask UEFA for guidance, ask FIFA for guidance, however you want to do it. But to me, despite what the statement may claim here, it just again feels like a passing of the buck, and in a manner that they know or has already been shown, there won't be any action taken.
Yeah, obviously, if La Liga can take matters into their own hands, then there can be action taken against incidents like this. And we do hope that that will be what happens in this case. We do have more Copa del Rey games coming up on ESPN Plus across Wednesday and Thursday. I'll tell you what, Craig, I definitely know where Ibiza is.
Oh, yeah. Where's Linares?
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
U.S. Soccer have released a statement concerning an investigation to an allegation of domestic abuse by Greg Berhalter in 1991. It says, consistent with our commitment to transparency, we will share the results of the investigation publicly when it is complete. U.S. Soccer condemns violence of any kind and takes such allegations very seriously. Last month, U.S. Soccer launched a full technical review of our men's national team program. With the review and investigation ongoing, U.S. Soccer will announce who will lead the January men's national team camp in the coming days. We look forward to building off the performance in Qatar and preparing for the journey towards 2026. There'll be a lot more talk about this topic on the latest edition of Football Americas. Make sure to join Seb and Herc for that on ESPN Plus. What about this? Kylian Mbappe and Ashraf Hakimi in New York to see the Brooklyn Nets win over the San Antonio Spurs. It was after they'd been given time off by PSG. Christophe Galtier did say he'd given the players time off. A few days to recover after being rushed back from Qatar. Here they are. They met Kevin Durant and his teammates after the game. And it all seemed a very nice venture out for them.
They're saying Killian's brought his mate with him. I hope he took in the show when he was over here.
Now, a little has been made about the fact that it came just after a loss to Lens.
We're not making a little...
we're not making a little of this. I mean, Christophe Galtier did say, Frank, that they were OK to have a few days off. Will this have been agreed with the coach? A trip to New York?
That I don't know, but I think they have the right to do whatever they want, you know, as long as they come back and be fit. And they knew that everybody will know, so I guess there was people in knowing at Paris Saint Germain what they were doing and agreeing with that. It gives a nice view of the club, you know, and what those players represent to the club. You know, it's nice to see. I'm talking about Kylian Mbappe, a French big top star, you know, where we've been talking about Messi, Ronaldo, Neymar for like 10 years or even more. And suddenly we start with Mbappe, now Ashraf Hakimi. It's nice to see new stars coming up and being welcomed everywhere, even in the United States, where most soccer players are pretty unknown. And I'm okay with that. You know, they're young players, as long as they recover, and even if they lost a game before, if the coach says you can go, you know, they can do what they want. You know, they're grown-ups, and they have to perform after the next week. That's the only thing matters.
Would you have done it, Shaka?
Would I have done it?
Little trip to New York to see the Nets.
If I was young enough and I had that kind of money just to spend on a weekend trip, sure, I'd do it. Listen, to that point, I don't see an issue with it. Not in today's game, not with the way travel is today. That's not an issue. You see players doing that all the time. I think it's unfortunate. It comes right on the back of a loss. But other than that, this is nothing unusual in
today's
football.
Those two probably came in a private jet. Him and I were coming on the boat. 4 days to get there, four days to get back.
I would be rowing.
2 days in the US. Shaq, keep rowing. Choppy waters ahead. The other interesting thing is, like, maybe, I don't know, 20 people know better than me, but 20 years ago, they would have walked any kind of, even a... An amazing soccer player 20 years ago would have walked into a basketball dressing room and nobody would have probably have known who the hell they were. But even these big stars over here in the US now suddenly realise, along with the NFL players, that this is the biggest sport on the planet.
Yep. We've tried to tell them for all this time.
We've been trying.
Yep. And Kylian and Ashraf are doing the work for us as well.
By the way, there'd only be one person rowing the boat if him and I were coming over, because he'd be in the back of it sleeping. Now, while I'm drafting away.
Hold on.
Let's
Andy Roar here. Maybe are you?
Well, we did see a rowboat competition. Neither of you guys were involved in that one, though.
No.
Yeah. In Madrid.
Stevie lost.
Stuart Robson. Ben Thomas. Stick around, we've got extra time coming up next. What a lovely memory. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Frank Leboeuf is joining Craig Shacker and myself in the studio today. Just a few memories about a special moment in Madrid when there was a rowboat race. Yeah. Yes.
You have to pick your poison carefully. Who gets in your boat? The wrong person gets in your boat. It's not just rowing you've got to worry about.
Anyway, the first question is a good question today. It's from Dan's High Chair. It says...
Oh, hold on. From who?
Dan's High Chair. We have...
Oh, goodness me.
Honestly, some of the questions sometimes you got to question the questions. But some of the names...
A good one.
The righteous anger of Craig Burley's one of
Nedim,
them.
Nedim,
the interior decorator.
Riley, the big golden decorator. Dan's high chair.
Anyway, Dan's high chair would like to know, for all, can you think of any coach, past or present, as feisty as Arteta on the sidelines? Frank?
I have to say no. I mean, the guy is really playing with his health, you know, and he really has to take care of his heart, you know. He's not going to last long if he carries on like that, you know. Complaining about everything. We wanted red cards for every foul from Newcastle. Complaining to the ref, complaining to Eddie Host, complaining... Well, but I never seen that in my life, you know. I've seen nervous coaches, but not that amount, you know. And I had Ruud Gullit, you know. He was always sitting on the bench, you know, and never had any reaction. He was always cool and calm, and maybe too much for some people, because some people were have been complained about that, saying, you know, that the guy didn't care, in fact, which I think it wasn't the case. But I never seen somebody like Arteta, never.
Stuart Pearce was, I think,
well, his nickname alone said it all.
I played with Stuart both at Newcastle and West Ham. I mean, incredible player. But as a manager, I remember playing, I think it was Pompey went up and played against Manchester City when he was managing. And he would come out and, you know, he pressed with following managers as ever to the dugout, and he would go and sit really quietly and just sit there and the press would take photos. And from the time the referee blew the whistle, he would stay on the bench up until the referee blew the whistle, and he would just fly off. As though he was still playing, he would just fly off and he'd be on the sidelines, running up and down. If you were playing on that side of the pitch, it had to be, and especially if you're a wing back, because that was his position, it had to be the worst experience as a wing back, playing for Stuart Pearce, when he's right there in your ear.
I think he's going to tackle you.
He's going to
2 foot you. When did you play under him? Or was you watching him?
No, I played with him at Newcastle West Ham. And no, Pompey went to Manchester City.
Oh, I see.
So I'm sitting there.
Was you watching him?
Yeah, I was on the bench for Pompey, so I was right there. And I think it was Pompey or West Ham. But anyway, I was on the bench, and I couldn't believe I was seeing it. Like, and he would be right in the air of the wing back all game long. It was murder.
No. But, you know, I didn't have anybody like that, but I know what players are like. Certainly, if you had somebody who was even remotely close to that, the players would be like, sit down,
yeah,
you know, to the manager. Sit down, shut up.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, shut up, shouting at me every 2 minutes. I'd go and stand on the other side of the pitch just to get away from him.
You were quite entertained by Arteta's antics today, Craig, watching the game.
He loves it. Craig loves Arteta.
Every show now we're going to have Arteta watch. It's because he drives you nuts. But, you know, they're having success at the moment, so who am I to argue? But What made me laugh was when he thought on Saturday or Sunday, whenever it was, when he thought that Brighton had brought the game back to 4-3 before VAR chopped the goal off and there was like 5 minutes left, all of a sudden Arsenal's big lead is gone. Well, it looked like it. He was the one on the touchline, was going like that to the players, calm down. With 30 seconds before the goal had gone in, he was running about, bobbing around like panicking. He's a character, isn't he?
It's passion. Okay, Craig, what does Eric Ten Hag have that Jose Mourinho or the other United coaches don't have? Why is he turning the club around in such a small time?
Well, I think we need to just slow down a little bit. Because, and give him his due, Solskjaer somehow managed to get them into second place. So did Mourinho at one point. Okay, the football wasn't great, blah, blah, blah. But I think we have to slow down with the turnaround. I mean, they're playing better at the moment. They're currently in the top four. There's bigger tests to come than three teams that are arguably going to be relegation material. Certainly two of them, Wolves and Forest, who they've just played. You've got to throw Bournemouth in there. So, yeah, I mean, bringing Casemiro in, I suppose, is one. Dealing with the Ronaldo situation, I think, showed strong management. But, turning around is a big statement. There's a long way to go, is what I would say.
Has he brought some much-needed discipline to
Yeah, I think,
that?
Well, he's brought in, he's got a good CV. He's trying to change the way they play, and they're all of a sudden playing some nice football again. Passing the ball quicker, and he's shown who the boss is. So that's a start.
Solskjaer did get them into second, but we had questions about his management throughout. Jose Mourinho similarly. I think one of the big differences between Ten Hag and Jose Mourinho is that Ten Hag is handling any situation in-house. And at times, I think Jose Mourinho kind of spoke out against players, and there's no easier way to lose a dressing room than throwing players under the bus. Not just the player involved, but everybody else in that dressing room. And it seems, again, a lot of the Ronaldo issue, for instance, was played out in public, but that was not Ten Hag's doing, in my opinion. And I think, as a result, the dressing room is a little bit more unified behind him than you saw under Jose Mourinho. But Craig's also right. While the football is a whole lot better, I don't think anybody's put in a whole lot of money in Manchester United finishing second, certainly not this season. So in terms of turnaround and everything that it means, we're still a little way from that.
All right.
They are only 9 points off the top. I mean, I'm not suggesting they're in a title race. They've got City and Arsenal coming up in the league. But, you know, they're not a million miles.
But it has been good. United have been really good.
They've played well of late.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Then again, they've played. If they play like that against Arsenal and City, then if they go and beat those two, or they play against those two teams and beat them, who knows what the hell is going to happen? But I think that's unlikely.
You'll be hearing from Jan Agafyatoft every single time
I
win now.
Jan. I don't know. I've no idea what country he's in when he tweets me. He's on the road somewhere.
He's in front of some hotel door. At least we know that.
Yeah, that much.
He's always got a fire warning in the background, isn't he? If by any chance.
Next question is for you, Shaka. What advice would you give to Arsenal so that they do not make the mistakes your Newcastle side made in '96?
Well, one of the things we discussed about is just a manager recognising the pressure. And understanding that the pressure is going to come, and just try to keep a lid on it. Keep that confidence of who you are and what got you to this point. I think that's where Newcastle came unstuck in that 95-96 season. As we were nearing the finish line, you could see it. Pressure started to tell. And there were a couple of things that season, I don't think Newcastle, I think I'm right to say, I don't think we won a single game on the road from January to the end of the season. And just little things like that take a toll. And you just need, this is when you need your manager just to rein things in. And just say, listen, never mind the little knocks that you get. Just continue to believe in who you are. And which is kind of what we've been seeing about Arteta for much of today.
So this is when, Frank, the Arsenal players need Arteta to say, guys, calm down.
We need 4-3 Arteta.
Yeah, and they can go even against the coach, look like Craig said, you know, calm down, sit down, shut up, you know, we don't want to hear from you anymore. We're going to deal because we don't hear you, so stop doing that because only the right back or the left back on the second half can hear you. But the others, we don't, so shut up, just sit it, you know, stay cool.
The issue I've got, one of the issues is not, I mean, I don't mind a manager being passionate in the sideline, that's fine. But doing it for 90 minutes almost and doing it outside his technical area, quite a way outside his technical area, and almost, actually, at the weekend, Lee Dixon on NBC was saying that he had bumped into the assistant a couple of times. Not Lee, Mikel Arteta, because he was so close, he's literally on the line. And sometimes when fullbacks and wingers are running up and down the wide channels, they're actually just leaving the pitch momentarily when you're making these runs. And he's in the way. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, at least stay inside those white lines.
I hope he keeps doing it, though.
He will keep doing it, for sure.
I like it. All right, Craig, if United, you've half said this, actually. If United keep going like this, can they challenge for the title? If not, how many players do they need to get to be up there with Arsenal and City?
Well, I think they are... Well, certainly for me, I don't think they can keep this run going because there are much tougher games to come, particularly in January. So I don't think they're challenging for the title this year. I might be wrong, but I don't think so. How many players? I mean... Unlikely to change the goalkeeper. Varane and Martinez. Dalot, I thought a right back, but Dalot's done fantastic. Wan-Bissaka's playing at the moment. I think they need another couple of midfielders in there to aid Casemiro to be able to, you know, sort of dynamic players that, you know, they have Fred and McTominay to come in, but I think they need better players than that to help out Casemiro, help out Eriksen, help out Bruno Fernandes. So I think that's an area. And clearly they're not the only club, but they need to bulk up in the striking department. That's a must for them. So probably at least 3 or 4 quality players, I would think, to take the next step.
Which is the more attractive club at the moment, right now, if you're a striker in the market between Manchester United and Chelsea?
Manchester United. I think what you've seen, at the very least in terms of management from Manchester United, gives you greater hope. What you've seen in terms of ownership from Chelsea, I think puts you off. That being said, Manchester United have their own ownership issues. Rumours that the Glazers are trying to sell, etc., etc. But right now, it just seems that Manchester United are on far more stable footing.
Frank, have United got a shot at the title at all?
Excuse me, but I want to answer to the question you just asked to Shaka. If I have Manchester United or Chelsea, I think I will have a third club, or maybe a fourth one, because I would be good enough to have other clubs. And then I will go to the other clubs and not those two, because Manchester United just came back from a dreadful time and Chelsea is in the middle of it. So I would be a big striker, a good striker. I will go for a club where can bring me a little bit more stability than those two clubs can bring to me right now. So what was your question now?
Do you think they have a shot at the title? How far off are they?
Chelsea? Or Manchester United?
No, Manchester United.
Okay. Well, as Craig said, you know, they have two big games to play in January. After that, it's going to be easier to answer the question. If they beat Arsenal and they beat Manchester City, we can consider that they can be contenders. If they lose again one of the two teams, no, never. I think City or Arsenal will win the Premier League.
The last question is for me, and it's about how I'm feeling about the job done by Michael Carrick since being appointed. Very, very happy.
Get Craig to read it. Read the question, Craig.
How is Kay feeling about the job done by Mr. Carrick since being appointed?
Very happy.
This Craig with no glasses, by the way.
Long away, it's long way away.
Oh, so it's, oh, it's okay, I got you.
He has definitely turned things around. There is a feeling of belief among the squad, and there's definitely a playoff push on, which we weren't saying at the beginning of the season.
Oh, look at you.
And are Man United in the title of chase?
Oh, can I change the question like Frank did? Anyway, we love it when you do that, Frank.
By the way, we just need to have a competition on Extra Time for the best Twitter handles that we get.
Dan's High Chair.
Dan's High Chair.
One today.
That's 100%. But you know he's got you know he does 100%. Sit in a high chair.
Oh, you absolutely do.
His kids sit in normal seats at the dinner table, and he sits in a high chair. And his missus has to strap him in.
When he goes to the barber to bring out that big piece of foam for him to sit on, give him some Legos to play with.
He does, and he gets his haircuts for about $6. Adult price, 26. Kids, 6.
Listen, Dan will be back tomorrow to defend himself.
Well,
let's be honest.
You open the door. He's had to have the pedals in his car have had to be extended. He sits in the car and his wee legs can't get to the accelerator. Like, so if he gets... You didn't know this. He has a special car belt, particularly with the pedals. Come on.
No, he doesn't. Okay, that's it now. We're off.
How do you know?
Seriously, I believe Craig. Longer than all of you,
I believe Craig.
He's got little legs.
Dan's going to be back tomorrow to defend himself. Join us then.
With a little legs.